From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on what was supposed to be just a normal, hot July Sunday. A summer day that started off like, well, most others, I guess. And then maybe if you're like me, you got a text message with three words: Biden is out. And then suddenly everyone was on their phones or calling someone or looking up the news or turning on WXXI or NPR. And what was theoretical became very, very real very, very quickly. Well, in the ensuing 12 hours, we saw a kind of coalescing around the vice president in some ways. We saw a lot of money raised. We saw the president release a statement. We saw a conspiracy theorist say, maybe that's not the president releasing that statement. Where is he? All kinds of weird stuff were happening. But this has been predicted now since the debate. I think if everyone who watched that debate was clear-eyed about it, there was definitely a possibility that this could happen. It is simply unprecedented in modern times. Internationally, we've been saying this. International elections take just a few weeks. It's not a big deal. That's what they do in France. That's what they do in the UK. Here, you got less than 4 months to an election, and that feels like it's going to be very, very fast. So this hour and next, conversations with local Democrats who have worked in politics, who understand maybe what, everything from fundraising to the dynamics in swing states. And we're going to get your feedback as well as we talk about what happens next in this really extraordinary moment. Let me welcome our guests in studio. Michelle Daniels is founder and executive director of the Daniels Democracy and Community Foundation. And of everyone that I know locally, one of the true encyclopedias of politics. I don't know if there's anybody you don't know or haven't met, so it's nice to have you back in studio. Thank you for being with us. Let me also welcome Rick Dollinger, former judge and state senator, past delegate to two Democratic National Conventions, himself a kind of encyclopedia. Welcome back, Judge.
Thank you.
And welcome on the line to Jerry Lynn Sparks, who is a former congressional press secretary, founder of the Ragged Democrats, an author, and someone who has worked in the halls of Washington and knows about how hard these fights can be. Jerry, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So I want to start with Michelle Daniels. You heard the news yesterday. By yesterday afternoon, I don't suspect you were surprised at the news, but how did it hit you when you saw it?
I was actually relieved.
Relieved, yeah.
I was relieved. On Friday, I wrote a long four-paragraph post on Facebook and Instagram, basically thanking Joe Biden for what he has done and for fighting for the beliefs that I hold dear. But it was time for him to step down, and also asking for the people that I know that are working on the ground for him to be conditioned for a future without Joe Biden, because a lot of people were in denial. A lot of people were upset with me for making that post, but there's a lot at stake. I mean, our last line of defense, the Supreme Court, is gone. We don't have the House anymore. And when I say we, I'm talking about Democrats with basically, I'm an independent now. I am a registered independent as of November, but I'm fighting for democracy. So we have lost the House, the Senate, we're in danger of losing. And if we lose the White House, that means everything is gone. And if something like Project 2025 happens, who's to say that when they redo the government, that doesn't make the presidency an eight-year presidency? There's a lot of things. You know, they're trying to get rid of the Board of Education. There's just so many things that worry me, not just for myself, but for my granddaughter, because whatever happens in the next 4 years can potentially hurt my granddaughter for the next three or more decades, because that's how long it's going to take to fix.
Rick Dollinger, your thoughts yesterday afternoon when you saw the news?
I was not surprised. Joe Biden has a career of making choices for the benefit of this country. He's done it as president in the initiatives, whether it's protecting women's rights to choose, whether it's the Reinvestment Act, whether it's the development of the CHIP initiative. All of those things are designed to promote an America that benefits everyone. And I think he sat down and said, can I win this race under the current circumstance when democracy's at stake? And came to a conclusion that it would be an uphill fight. He could still win it, but the chances were that another Democrat would have a better opportunity in running against Donald Trump. So I look at this as the last, I hope not the last, but certainly the biggest sacrifice that Joe Biden has made for a better America, and that is to elect someone who will protect all of our values across this country. And he realized that given electoral politics as it is in this country today, that he was not the man to do it. It's a courageous, noteworthy, and incredibly American gift that Joe Biden has given to all of us to have a chance for an election in which the issues will dominate and not merely his age or physical condition.
Jerry Lynn Sparks, what did you think?
I was not surprised. I was 6 days off, though. On your show, I actually said that I thought he would be out in last Monday, so I was off 6 days.
Why were you also expecting this at this point?
Because, Judge Dollinger said, I think that Joe Biden has served his country since 1972. I mean, that's like anybody in this country that's like 52 and younger, he's been serving this country. And so I know that that's something that's in the fabric of his being. And I think once the people that were, in leadership spoke with him, he did remember what his reason for serving was, is to help this country. And he saw that. So I applaud him for that. Just what a great career this man has done for public service to this country. So I think he put him, his country before self. And it's in alignment with what I would think of him.
Well, now what we have, as I said at the outset here, is what will feel like a very compacted short campaign. Although I dream of those European elections or even a Canadian election where it doesn't feel like it's endless. And Michelle, for you, who is choice number one? What do you want to see happen?
I want to see what happens on the convention floor. I'm going to be supporting Kamala. However, I think it would be a good idea for someone else to throw their hat in, because if it's just her running, there's going to be an overwhelming feeling with the Democratic Party and the independents and Republicans that this was a coronation. I feel that Kamala has to earn her spot, even though I know that she is beyond capable. I know that she can do this. But one of the things that I saw, even though Hillary lost in 2016, she was a lazy campaigner in the beginning. But when Bernie started getting steam, I saw a better candidate. And so I don't want Kamala to feel that this is hers. And one of the things that was refreshing to hear when she found out was that she's going to earn it. That's the type of language that I want to hear, that I love to hear and need to hear. And I think the whole United States will see that.
It's very has your sentiment has echoes of Congressman Clyburn, who said yesterday essentially the same. He said he is going to endorse Vice President Harris. He also thinks it is healthy if there is, call it a mini primary, whatever the case may be, open the process up where it is not simply anointed. Let people decide. He is confident that the vice president will not only earn it, but can win the presidency. But he is comfortable because he feels that she can earn it. And he feels that that will be a signal. So part of what I think what I'm hearing from you, Michelle, is that if it doesn't go that way, if the only opposition is, I'm not going to say Dean Phillips, but a Dean Phillips type, RFK, who I don't know who the opposition would be, who isn't a kind of a bona fide contender. I think you seem to think that there's a real risk to what that will signal to the American people. On the other hand, I want to put this to you. If you are Andy Beshear, J.B. Pritzker, Wes Moore, Gavin Newsom, Gretchen Whitmer, Gina Raimondo, Josh Shapiro, and you think the party's already coalescing around the vice president, I don't think you're going to step up and challenge her in the next 6 weeks, do you?
Absolutely not. If you look at her endorsements, you have people like Beshear, you have people like Shapiro. They're already behind her. And Pete Buttigieg, a lot of people were discounting him, but a lot of people that have inboxed me are asking, would it be a good idea for Pete Buttigieg to run? Back in 2020, he was in my top five.
Yeah, sure.
So, I think right now, Nobody is trying to go up against her because there is that number two spot. If you look at the people who have endorsed her, she has more than two-thirds of, I believe it's the House and two-thirds of the Senate and 11 governors with 12 left to go. That's just within 24 hours. So you have people that are holding out. And I think that they're holding out because they want to know who the VP pick is going to be. Usually they say that elections don't go by the VP choice, but this one is a very important one because you have potential candidates for VP that are in big battleground states that can do very well for the ticket. And all the things that worry the donors and some of the naysayers of Kamala, those tensions can be eased by who her VP is. And also, who can take on J.D. Vance in a debate? So a lot of people are holding their breath. I'm not holding my breath on J.D. Vance debating.
He doesn't worry you?
No.
Okay. But I think the dynamic you're describing is very interesting. And I don't know how quickly she would make a VP announcement. I mean,
honestly, and I say this with all due respect, I hope she keeps her mouth shut until the convention floor.
Oh, interesting.
Reason being is that the longer that people are waiting to find out who the VP is, that gives her time to have those potential picks as surrogates in these battlegrounds.
And you want to see how they're doing?
And yeah, audition mm-hmm. and also bring in new people that were not sure of Kamala. So the longer that she waits, and people might say, oh, well, convention is too long. Donald Trump did it, and it was just fine. And that will bring new air into the convention floor. Right now, we just got new air, but now we have the potential of second new air. That's excitement, something that this party has pretty much, it's been depleted for like at least 2 years. This is good.
All right, one more question on this thread, and then we'll turn to Rick and Jerry. But we've heard that Joe Manchin may challenge Kamala Harris. Do you think that that would be the kind of challenge where you say, all right, at least she wasn't anointed, she had a challenger, let's see how this goes?
No. At best, I would see Joe Manchin as a Stein. First of all, he would have to change party affiliation. How are you trying to run for the party's ticket if you're not even part of the party? So I don't think that he's significant as far as the Democratic Party as being a challenger. I see him more as a spoiler if he can even get those votes.
Okay. Rick Dollinger, what would you like to see happen next?
Well, let me comment first on the coronation idea. We just saw a coronation. We just saw one. A man ran for the Republican nomination. He was never seriously challenged in the primaries. If there's ever been a coronation...
The governor of Florida wanted to beat him. Nikki Haley wanted to beat him.
Yeah, they did. And by New Hampshire, they were gone. Or South Carolina, they were all gone. I mean, this was a coronation, from my point of view, right from the start. He was the former president. He was going to get the nomination. Those were, in my judgment, based on the polling and other things, they were never serious challengers. So this has been a coronation by the Republican Party. That's number one. Number two, I have never been convinced that the choice of vice president is the critical issue in a presidential campaign. This is going to be about Kamala Harris. It's going to be about her record. She has a distinguished record. You mentioned as a prosecutor, as the attorney general of Florida, as a senator
California,
yeah. And what she voted for. This is really going to be a judgment on her, and I'm not convinced that whoever the vice presidential nominee, I agree with that it may bolster her prospects in a couple of the swing states, but I don't believe anybody goes into a polling booth and looks at that second name on the ballot. It's really a first name.
Well,
and that's the name.
And it really is, Judge, about those seven or so swing states anyway, right? That's what
correct.
That's what this election is.
Correct. And by the way, I think it's crystal clear that we will win the popular vote again. The Democrat is going to win the popular vote. The question is, can they carry those six or seven states? Now, I'll agree with Michelle that maybe if one of those vice presidential candidates can bring one of the swing states to the table, that would be beneficial. But there's seven of them. And I'm not sure that Josh Shapiro, even though he can bring Pennsylvania, has any sway in Wisconsin or Arizona or Nevada
or Michigan.
And so if you pick one and you are looking for them to deliver that state, you may get that state. But the big question is, can the nominee deliver the other seven swing states?
Well, let's get back to Vice President a little later. I want to ask you who you would want to see at the top of the ticket now, then.
Well, I'm going to back Kamala Harris at this point until there's some other candidate who makes an announcement who can convince me that they have a better chance of winning than she does. She has already raised a pile of dough, so she's got that money in the bank. I assume that Biden will transfer the assets of the Democratic National Committee to her, so she'll have those assets to run on. I think part of this depends on the donor community and where they're going. I think it also depends, and then the interesting thing that at least I've seen is that the Democratic leadership thus far, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Hakeem Jeffries, have not endorsed. Now, I think that may be in part because they don't want to create the sense that this is a steamroller to the
Michelle's
convention.
Point. Yeah.
Right. And I concede that. But I also think that they may be at least evaluating how the initial stages of this go to see whether she has the chops to portray the concept that she is the person to lead the Democratic Party in a fight against Donald Trump. And the final thing I would just say is this. I hope that someone, if she's the candidate, gives her the notion that you need to portray the real Donald Trump. And I think the Democratic Party has completely missed the way to go after Donald Trump. And it's been, my opinion, a political sin that they haven't done it the right
way.
Well,
what's one example?
The best example, from my point of view, is to portray Donald Trump as your next-door neighbor. Would you want a guy who lives next door to you, who's committed fraud to the extent of $500 million, who had sexually assaulted a woman in a changing room in Macy's or some department store, who paid $130,000 to cover up the fact that he was having sex with a porn star while his wife was having a baby, who was convicted of fraud against the banks, who was found guilty of lying under important documents in New York State? Everybody says those documents weren't important. That's a bunch of absolute nonsense.
Thank you for editing yourself.
My point is this. New York has the strictest laws about business records because we are the financial capital of the world, and people have to be able to rely on financial documents, and Donald Trump was lying on them. This is a man who's a liar, who's a sexual assaulter, who's been convicted. The only real question America needs to ask themselves, is this the man you want to have live next door to you and invite over for dinner? Why, if you wouldn't like that, would you ever considering putting him in the White House?
It's kind of like an updated version of, do you want to have a beer with this guy? Jerry Lynn Sparks, so who do you want to see at the top of the ticket?
Michelle Obama.
Oh, I feel her.
I would love her because here's the thing.
I actually agree with that as well.
Yeah, nothing against Kamala's record, but it's Hillary version 2.0. There is a time in our history when Adlai Stevenson was a nominee, and the media called him, his supporters, the Shakespeare vote. And I think that's what we're looking at here. You look at Gore, Kerry, and Hillary, they all had this thing in common where they didn't have the I'm going to have a beer with you effect. That Kamala is not a good communicator. She fizzled out very quickly in her first presidential run, which is not a good sign. And the reasons for that were because she wasn't having strength in her message. She couldn't find a core message. And she tends to go new age wonky when she is on the stump. And she didn't connect with voters. The reason Donald Trump won, ironically, is because he has that oratory skill that relates to working class voters. His voters, by the way, are not going to be swayed by no matter who we put on the ticket. So they know he's a criminal and they keep putting him. This is the third time they've nominated him. So we're not going to get any of his voters away with a great Vice President pick or even, Kamala Harris. What we will do is energize the Democratic turnout by having an exciting, relatable, good communicator on the top of the ticket. Someone like Michelle Obama who's likable and
now,
relatable.
Jerry, you want Michelle. Michelle Daniels wants Michelle. Rick Dollinger would think that's great. That Michelle Obama doesn't want it, so now you got to give me a realistic choice.
Wes Moore. Let's put Wes Moore up there. He's a military veteran. He is a governor, which I've already said on your program, governors make the best candidates because they run many countries. They run a budget.
Well.
They understand it. Yeah, so I think Wes Moore would be great. Gavin Newsom, but he won't do it because he has the same political advisors that Kamala has. They're both from California, so you'd lose their electoral votes. So it leaves you with someone like Wes Moore. Gretchen Whitmer would be great. I like Kamala. I just don't think that she's going to win. It's going to be Hillary all over again. And the media right now is saying, oh, $50 million came in. Trump beat Hillary with half the money.
Yeah. And Jerry, you know, you heard Rick Dollinger say one of the keys is just convincing people of the Republican candidate's character. Do you want him living next door? One thing Rick Dollinger did not say is, would you want to live next door to a man who wants to live in a mansion that would block your view? Everything is plated in gold. And by the way, in every account of how he deals with workers, the actual working class, they get stiffed.
But Evan, you forgot. He showed national security documents to strangers in his gold-plated house in Florida.
I'm going back to your living next door thing. I'm with you. Like that there is something disturbing in some ways, and I'm not a partisan. I know people, I'm going to get an email from someone who says, you're a partisan. I grew up in a small-C conservative household. I don't see a lot of small-C conservatism left in this country that is viable. Not of the kind, you know, I think some very smart people, Noah Rothman was one of them, said during the Republican National Convention last week, they have, with J.D. Vance, they have thrown Ronald Reagan off the ship. Now, I think a lot of Republicans would argue that they haven't, but they certainly have if you look at their values and what they are supporting now. So Reaganism is dead. Small C conservatism is dead. And you have something very, very different embodied by a leader who has treated actual workers terribly, like the working class people, the people who went to Trump University thinking that that was some sort of a magic ticket and got scammed. So it is an interesting time, but Jerry, part of I think what I hear you saying is, set all that aside, you got to get those tens of thousands of votes in the swing states, and you're concerned about the vice president's ability to do it.
I don't think the vice president pick means as much as people think it does. So I think Dollinger was correct on that. I really do believe at the end of the day, when voters go into the voting booth, what they're thinking of is, who do I like? Even though they don't admit it, psychologically, that's what's going on. And likability is a huge factor. I can't fathom why people are so, you know, in tune with Donald Trump. It's against everything that I stand for. But he has that working class mindset he's tapped into. And that's really, Hubert Humphrey is what I keep thinking of. Vice President Hubert Humphrey and this divided convention, and he lost tremendously to Nixon. I'm worried that that's what we're going to have happen here. There's so many things that are similar to that. I spent the night thinking about this, Evan. I really do think that Obama, President Obama, being silent tells me a lot. I think that he wants a mini primary. I agree with him. I agree with Michelle Daniels. I think a mini primary would be really, really good.
Yeah, I just don't know if you're going to get it. And before I turn back to Michelle, and if you're on the phone, listeners, we'll take your calls coming up here. We've got 2 hours on this subject today. Dallas writes to say, as a neighbor, Hunter Biden may be worse. Dallas, Hunter Biden is your neighbor. There are people with addiction in every state and every county in this country. They are literally your neighbors right now.
Can I just add one other thing? Donald Trump and Hunter Biden were accused of exactly the same thing, lying on documents that were filed with government. That's what he was accused of. He was accused of lying, falsifying the fact that he was addicted to drugs when he applied for a gun license. Donald Trump was lying when he filed business records in New York. So while someone may not like Hunter Biden living next door because he was drug addicted and he had a problem of lying, Donald Trump was lying all the time, lying to banks. I won't go through
the Hunter Biden thing is... We're moving on because Joe Biden is not the candidate. Michelle, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to speak on this whole narrative that Kamala's presidential aspects fizzled out. She left because of quote-unquote fundraising. But those of us who were paying attention, her fundraising was doing well. This was she was still climbing high because she was able to clap back at Joe Biden, and she actually had fairly good numbers. But then abruptly, right before the Atlanta debate, which was the debate before South Carolina, which we know is the wall, she dropped out. Her supporters were confused. People who wanted to see her at the Atlanta debate were confused and were asking questions. Shortly after, you have the South Carolina primaries. Clyburn was not endorsing anybody. Remember, we were just talking about Clyburn. Clyburn then endorsed Biden.
Yep.
The word in South Carolina on the street from the operatives was that he made a deal with Joe Biden that he would support him at that primary if he would select Kamala as the vice president. If you look at a lot of my posts from back then, I was talking about prepare for Kamala. She's going to be the vice president. So, no, let's not say she could not get those numbers because she was turning things, especially with that little girl was me. She can clap back and whoever debates Donald Trump, and Donald Trump does not want to vote, does not want to debate with her. He's trying to change the debate schedule now because he doesn't want to debate against this woman because she is quick on her feet. She's got clapbacks. So let's not say that her campaign fizzled out. It was brokered out.
But to your point about, you know, Trump doesn't want to debate her and, you know, what would that look like? Again, to a Democratic Party base, they already can't stand Donald Trump. They already are going to support whoever it is on that ticket. It is a debate. What is it in your mind that's going to convince those skeptical independents or swing voters who do exist? I want to keep saying this to listeners. I know you think, how could they exist? How everybody knows Donald Trump. Everybody knows Joe Biden. How would there have been swing voters? There are tens of thousands of swing voters. They are real. And in seven states, they're going to decide the presidency. Do you think it's the debate? Do you think it's something else? Do you think that there is time to really introduce or reintroduce her to these voters and convince them we're moving away from Trump here? We're going to go with her. Yes?
Okay, so I'm going to go back to the VP choices. It's not the VP choice, it's VP choices. She's got VP choices spread out through the whole country. Those people are tremendous surrogates, and they are going to sing and dance as loud for her if they think that they have a chance. So she has a home to stay and go ahead and talk to their neighbors.
And not commit to anybody yet, right?
Correct.
That's why you're saying
this. This is why I'm saying she needs to keep her mouth shut, respectfully, I'm saying it, until the convention floor when she has to choose a VP. Because as long as you have people in Arizona, Mark Kelly, Gretchen Whitmer. You know, that's Arizona, which is a swing state. Michigan, Whitmer. That's a swing state. Shapiro, Pennsylvania, swing state. You have North Carolina, Cooper, swing state. If she keeps her mouth shut and keeps letting them play, quote unquote, the apprentice, we will be fine because they will saturate their neighbors, their areas, their constituents, and normalize what they would, you know, because let's be honest, there's going to be a lot of sexism and racism involved here. And if you have those surrogates saying, this is what I know about Kamala, and you should respect and trust her because I do. And those
Michelle,
people have
I
won
need
those
to
states.
Say something.
I'm sorry?
So I respect everything that you have done in politics, like, but I do want to disagree with you a little bit. I follow the campaign very closely in 2020 because I lived in California for 10 years. I actually was very excited by Kamala Harris, but her 2020 campaign, it wasn't that it was just a broker deal. Maybe that happened as well, but it lacked money. There were reports of staffer and operations chaos, and she couldn't find a core message. And she had really just, you know, a little blip of a great day, and I got excited. And like you said, we're all shocked when she dropped out. But I think she saw the writing on the wall. And then as VP, she struggled with those same things. There have been internal reports from people that I still know in D.C. that the staffing issue, the operations of her office has been chaotic. I think it's flattening out now. And she does have some problems on the stump where she kind of meanders with her messaging. And even right now when you're saying she needs to keep her mouth shut, would you have said that about President Obama? He's really good. He doesn't need to do that. There's a core communication and messaging problem she has.
Michelle's just saying that she doesn't want her to pick a VP yet. She wants her to be coy so all those surrogates will do the job on the ground.
I was going to say, do not put words in my mouth. I just said specifically about the intel about the vice president.
Yeah.
But we need Kamala to be out there speaking as much as possible. I want to see holes on the bottom of her feet like we saw in 2007 and 2008 for Barack Obama.
So real quick here, I'm going to ask all three guests a question, then we're going to come to your phone calls here. And I have no idea if we get here. Okay. So if you're on the phone, we're coming to you next. Just the last question for our guest from the host this hour is this. Jerry is raising the concern about messaging and having that core message and really kind of tightening it and taking it to the voters. Michelle, whether it's 1, 2, or 3 points, how do you want her, if Kamala Harris, if Vice President Harris becomes the nominee, what is that message to those undecided voters? How do you package that?
Well, first, I think she's on a good start right now because she's starting to get people from the Ocasio and the Pelosi, but she's got to preach unity. I shouldn't probably use the word preach, but speak of unity and find out exactly why it was that Biden was losing so many constituents hand and fist, because I became an independent last year. She needs to talk or have her people talk to people like me to find out what the message needs to be. Her telling us what the message is different from her finding out what the message is. So we need to have people on the ground, not in the group thing. The same people that were talking about Biden was fine and, you know, we should stick the course and riding with Biden, those are not the people to ask.
Okay, Rick Dollinger.
My view is she doesn't need to preach unity. The Democratic Party is completely unified in one objective, beating Donald Trump. That's why the only criteria for whoever carries the mantle of this party is the ability to beat Donald Trump. If Kamala Harris can do it, I'm with Kamala Harris 1,000%. But my view is we win on the message. We win on the message. Women's rights, investment, public confidence in government, the Supreme Court butchered by Donald Trump. Those are the issues we win on. What we need is an effective spokesman. And the bottom line for me, and this I agree with our other participant, is simply this, is Kamala Harris likable enough to invite for dinner? Because I believe that likability, people liked Barack Obama. They liked Michelle Obama. They liked Joe Biden. Joe Biden convinced everybody in 2020 that he was the guy to sit down and have a beer with. He was the guy to invite to dinner, that he would be a guest who would be lively and entertaining. And I think that's the message that Kamala Harris needs to convince America, that all of her skills, and she's got abundant skills, can translate into, this is someone we have confidence in, who we'd invite to dinner, and frankly, we'd invite him to the White House.
The Democratic Party is not united as most think. I know many people who voted Barack Obama twice, voted for Stacey Abrams, voted for Hillary, voted for Biden, who are now voting for Trump. This is the type of thing that the Democratic Party needs to look at, because if they keep on turning a blind eye, listen, we're messing with my granddaughter's future and her grandchildren's future right now. This is not the election to think that we are unified when we're not.
Jerry, what does the messaging have to be?
So, first of all, I want to start by saying I would love to have Kamala Harris dinner, but I am of your Shakespeare vote. We need to get the working class voters. We need to get the youth vote. We got to get people excited to come to the polls. So I think she does have to, tighten up her messaging. The economy is what people are looking at. In the swing state of Nevada, it's a border state. You would think that immigration is the highest issue, but it's not. It's the economy. So it's like the old Bill Clinton phrase, it's the economy, stupid. So we need to talk about that. The price of groceries, are really impacting working class Americans. I agree with Judge Dollinger that health care, the Supreme Court, women's rights, those things all matter. But at the end of the day, it's, can I afford to feed my family? And, the other thing, for just to address what Michelle said, I don't want the Democratic Party to become a party that just says we've got to just unite and get behind, like, who all we've, said is the best one. Because then we become the other side and we have blind loyalty. And then that's not democracy. What I want from this election is to really preserve democracy. And I sadly don't think right now that Kamala is the strongest one because of her communication skills. But I'd love to have her to dinner.
Well, let me get to your phone calls. Keith first, waiting for a while there. Go ahead, Keith.
A couple things. I think it should be asked why he picked J.D. Vance. I got two prescriptions for Keith Goldstein. Goldstein. Sorry about that.
Keith is always in line somewhere.
Of course, as soon as I pull up to the window, I got two scripts for Keith Goldstein.
He's usually ordering coffee. Right. Go ahead, Keith.
Sorry. So, what? 921.50. Okay, now everybody in Rochester knows that.
Keith, do you want to? Here, Keith, all right. I'm going to put you back on hold. I'm going to come back to Keith. Oh, what a day. What a day. I think we've got Lisa on three. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm tuning in, I think, a little late because I'm driving. But I did hear about, you know, the messaging, you know, that would you want him to be your next-door neighbor? And I think all this stuff is valid. Would you like to have a beer with this person? But for God's sake, is anybody talking about Project 2025 and what the intention is there? And could even Trumpers want that? I mean, this is a track to North Korea. Come on.
Well, Lisa, thank you. I mean, Michelle, was you raised that earlier this hour, your concern about Project 2025, which Trump's team has recently said, oh, that's not our idea. That's the Heritage Foundation. That's not us.
Most of the people that drafted the 900 and whatever pages and have been promoting have been literally tied to him, either working for him in the past, working for him now, or strong supporters or strong donors or people that he has appointed. So for him to say, I don't trust. Anytime he says, I didn't do something, usually means he has. And the courts have proven that.
Well, and let me also, there's an interesting part of this. There is this political, there's an old saw that says, you know, you can't just have people vote against something. They got to be voting for something.
Yes.
And I think that there's a lot of wisdom in that. But I also think it is important to tell people what they would be voting against. And that is what Lisa on the phone is saying, is she doesn't want Project 2025. And she wants that aired out publicly to let people know, just so you're aware, this is on the table here. How powerful do you think that is? As opposed to spending more time on, here's what you're voting for, Michelle.
Well, there has to be a combination of both. And before, I was always speaking of, oh, we're bringing the boogeyman. But I saw in 2016, that wasn't enough. Donald Trump came in as the boogeyman. So we also have to give people hope, inspire them that there is a better future. Things are bleak now, but we need to work together. The reason why they're bleak is because we have not been cohesive. But we've got to get to that point first.
Rick Dollinger next. Go ahead.
Whenever Donald Trump says, I won't abide by Project 2025, why anyone in America, given his history of absolute prevarication, would ever believe him is beyond me. I think he made statements like during the course of the campaign in 2016 that, I'm not out to change the Supreme Court or its direction in the United States. It's been completely altered by his three picks. He picked wildly conservative products of the Heritage Foundation and the far-right legal community to serve on the Supreme Court. Whenever Donald Trump says, oh, I really won't do that, no one should believe him. And the bottom line is this. The people need something to vote for. Kamala Harris, if she's the nominee, has a perfect answer to that. Do what Joe Biden did. Reinvest in America. Be tough with China, support women's rights, support labor. Those are the things that people care about. And Michelle's correct that economy is the issue, but inflation is coming down. We're recovering from COVID. The signs in the economy, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is over 41,000. The economy, parts of it are booming. People's 401ks are up there. We've got to do something. We've raised the minimum wage in most of the swing states. Democrats are doing these things. We ought to be proud of it. And I think that's our message. And it's not unfair to say Project 2025 will be the demise of democracy as we know it. And when Donald Trump says, oh, don't worry, I won't do that, given his track record, no one in America should believe him.
Jerry, you've been parts of, you've been inside the rooms when they're talking campaign messaging. How much needs to be, here's what you'd need to be worried about voting, here's what you're voting against, and here's what you're voting for?
People want to vote for something. The people that are going to vote for Donald Trump, I was on the phone with Appalachian Trump voter last night. By the way, I'm from Appalachia, and Hillbilly Elegy, the book by J.D. Vance, was insulting. It made me very angry, and he's a poser, but, you know, that's not the topic here. But for Project 2025, I called some people last night who live in the Appalachian Mountains. And they don't care. They don't believe it. They said, oh, that's just talk. They believe what they want to believe. There is a tendency for both sides of the political aisle to live in an echo chamber. And I purposely, for the last couple of years, have been forcing myself to watch a little of Fox News. I don't want to live in an echo chamber. So both sides need to stop and really take a look at what the other media is saying and try to be a little more well-rounded in understanding the perspectives. That doesn't mean you have to agree with it. It helps me. It actually informs me how to create better messaging. So we're not going to change the people that are going to vote for Donald Trump. It just isn't going to happen. If we want a message, I don't think that we're going to win with Kamala. And here's why. When Hillary Clinton won the nomination in 2016, I actually called a Democratic congressional staffer. I said, we just lost the election. She's a little bit older than me. She says, oh, no, you know, she's got all these, you know, attributes. She's got the party machine behind her. And again, she had twice as much money as Donald Trump, just like Kamala is getting $50 million right now. And I was right. And the reason I was right, because I come from Appalachia and I am from working class. I'm blue collar from the way I was raised. I just feel like we're going to lose if Kamala's at the top of the ticket. And I feel bad because I like her and I am pro, you know, people that are as talented as her running our country. I would love to see that. I wouldn't vote for a woman just because she's a woman, but I'm not going to not vote for her because she's a woman either. But there's a lot of people in the electorate who would not vote for her because she's a woman and a woman of color. I'm not saying she shouldn't, you know, be considered, but her likability is her biggest drawback. And this is no time for ideology. This is time for we have got to win this thing.
Let me just mention here, J.D. Vance's book, Hillbilly Elegy, has been brought up a few times here. If you're looking for a different book, similar subject, journalist Sarah Smarsh wrote a book in 2018 called Heartland. The subtitle is A Memoir of Working Hard and Being Broke in the Richest Country on Earth. It's a book worth reading. We've had her on this program before. Let me get Andrew next. Hello, Andrew. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good, sir.
Hello?
Yep, go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, I think, you know, Kamala is, people are worried that she's way too far to the left. And that's what's, you guys, you need to get a moderate. There's tons of anti-Trumpers out there, Republicans, who would vote for a moderate Democrat. You guys are going to screw this up, and we're going to be in big trouble with Trump because you're too far to the left. People think Kamala is Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. She votes the same way they do. And Mr. Ballinger, I love, but, you know, we're spending too much money. When you say invest, it's hurting the people in the poor people in this country. All your investment is not helping anybody except for the people that know how to handle money, which invest money in Wall Street. Anyway.
Andrew, thank you for the phone call. I appreciate that. First of all, I think I heard Jerry saying yes.
Yes.
You thought he's right. Go ahead, Jerry.
What he said is right. The polls are showing that Kamala is running about the same as Biden. So what have we gained here? I mean, look at history. You've got to learn from history. And recent history, you know, Hillary, not likable. And Gore, unfortunately, not likable. And, you know, Kamala, I watched Fox News last night to see how they were portraying her. And they showed a clip of one of her speeches. And what the caller just said is true. Kamala's to the left of Biden. This is Democrats living in an echo chamber. Democrats are going to take California. Trump is not going to take California. So we're not gaining anything from that. So I think we do need a moderate if we're going to save this election. I really do.
Well, I've worked as a canvasser, and also I worked in a precinct in Iowa. And when people had their second choices, things got different. When you only have one choice, you only go with one person. So when a survey is made, people chose Biden over Kamala. I think that we need to wait at least another couple of weeks to let the actual polls catch up and see if she's only a couple of points behind Biden. I think we need to just let the time ride out for the moment. I know we don't have a lot of time, but we can't judge today based on yesterday and last week.
And let me, as I turn it over to Rick, let me just say to Michelle's point there, some listeners have sent me some very frustrated emails saying, Evan, you keep saying that 75% of Democrats don't think Joe Biden is fit and don't want him to, and you can't trust that polling. There's a wide range of polling out there, and we try to be wise consumers of polling. What we knew for sure before yesterday is that Americans in big numbers did not want Joe Biden or Donald Trump running for president, and Joe Biden was viewed as unfit based on his cognitive ability by Democrats and Republicans and independents. That polling is not sort of just out there or fake or whatever. That was very valid polling. Now, to Michelle's point, it is also true that Vice President Harris has not been polling well. However, most people who are pretty well attuned to the science of polls tell you that this seismic an event needs some time to be absorbed by the electorate, and the electorate is going to take a few weeks and think about this. That's why, Michelle Daniels has said, let's not anoint, even if you support Kamala Harris. You're saying let's do this at the convention. You've got a month before then, and let's see where the polling is. Let's see where the sentiment is. Let's see where the energy is, because things are inevitably going to move somewhere. Could be moving against Kamala Harris, could be moving more for her. I do think this is an area where if you look at a poll from last week on Kamala Harris versus Trump, I don't think it helps you that much. Rick Dollinger.
I completely agree with that. I want to add one thing to the point that Evan made. Whatever the polls were in the last 2 months about Biden against Trump, there may be those who say those polls aren't completely accurate, but they were so lopsided in their analysis that you could not ignore them. When 35% or 40% of the electorate says, we don't like either one of these guys, that is a message that cannot be ignored. That's one. Mm-hmm. The second thing is, my other issue with the nomination of Vice President Harris is I have said repeatedly that I don't believe she's as far left as some people suggest she is, a former prosecutor, former attorney general. I think she can defend herself from attack that she's too far left. My concern is she's too California, and I'm not convinced that the rest
but
of
But what do you mean by that?
Well, I think California's reputation among people in swing states, especially as you move further east, is that it's a refuge of the far left. It's run by far left Democrats. And under those circumstances, you can't really associate with anybody from California. They're like their own little political cadre out there. They're not.
And you're saying she's going to be hurt by that reputation.
I believe that in trying to convince swing states to vote for her, her California identification could be critical. And I want to go back to the point that Jerry made. I believe that elections are going to come down to who do you want to have over for dinner? Can you project that warmth? Joe Biden, for whatever flaws he's had, that was his calling card. He was from Scranton, Pennsylvania, and his calling card was, I'd be glad to go to dinner and entertain you. And I think that was his calling card that gave him the election in 2020. So I think it's a likability issue, and I'll conclude on this note. Michelle's correct about one thing. We need to let this – well, now I said one thing, but I'm going to concede others. My point is my point is the coffee is now been set in the percolator. We need to see how it comes out, and we got to wait for it to percolate through, see what the polls do, see what the funders do, see how the overall party reaction is.
You agree
is.
With her on don't anoint, wait till the convention, make it official there. Don't
Correct.
Make it
and
official
I would,
next week.
I would also agree with her. There's no need to anger anybody by appointing a vice president now. Wait until Donald, just like Donald Trump did. Wait.
All right. Deborah, and I think this is Deborah in Rochester. Go ahead.
Well, hi, Evan. I agree with your previous guest there as far as that I believe that Kamala is more moderate than far left. But I don't believe in the California scare. I just don't. And Evan, you said it so well. It takes time. Like any other vice president, she's been kind of invisible. The polls are going to change. I just think she's absolutely suited for this. There was a great on July 15th. on Amador's show, there was the Icelandic president-elect woman, second woman elected. First was in 1980, the first in the world. She has a lot to say about our country and what's going on. There's a video. I recommend everybody see it. I just think that she is the only one that is going to take us there, and she's perfect for it. The panic that's going on is just, at this point in time, it's just a little bit overblown, and that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Deborah, thank you. Jerry, keep it tight. Go ahead.
Yeah, so people who are not primaried actually don't do very well historically. So look at that. I'm from Appalachia. I lived in California for 10 years, so I feel like I know both of these very well. So I want to say this last thing. In the three swing states that are the blue wall, Michigan and Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, in 2020, Biden won. But in 2016 against Hillary, Trump won all three of the blue walls. I'm worried that Kamala is Hillary version 2.0, and we cannot afford that.
Final 20 seconds or so, Michelle. Final thoughts from you. Go ahead.
We got to caution ourselves from keep saying that she's the nominee. She is not the nominee. That process is still going. So, Rick,
right.
I need you to work on that. No more. She's going to work.
I can see that, Michelle.
The floor is still open. So let's not think that this is a coronation. She's working.
Okay. Fair enough, Rick Dollinger.
Fair enough. I agree with that.
I want to thank our guests here, and we've got some elected officials coming in next hour who are going to weigh in on where they think this is all going. Listeners, if you've called or shared emails, or if you've called us while you're picking up prescriptions or ordering coffee, and then we caught you off guard by taking your call, call us back next hour. Hey, listen, I want to thank Michelle Daniels, Rick Dollinger, Jerry Lynn Sparks for being with us. Thanks for the outstanding commentary this hour. We appreciate you being here. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. More connections coming up in a moment.